Wilhelm, do I have to do hello there?
You do not have to do it.
Okay. I'm not going to do it then. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR. I am Dave DiNatale in for Nathan Zagura and also in for Jason Gibbs. Both those guys enjoying some time off. Matt Wilhelm is here.
Yes.
Sir Andrew Gribble is here.
What's going on?
Sir Gribbs. Andrew.
Sir Andrew.
There you go.
Yes. I sound like I'm from the UK. Guys, it feels like moving day here at 76 Groves Boulevard as I was pulling in. A fleet of workers are outside ready to kind of come in as the team wraps up the last day of mandatory minicamp. Matter of fact, Gribbs, you were just downstairs with Hugh Jackson. We'll hear from Hugh in a little bit. It definitely has the feeling of like school's out here.
Yeah, and you know, Hugh was talking about how this is the time of year you never want to see come to an end, and kind of mentioned this is an earlier ending to the mini camp as compared to last year because the Browns got started so much earlier. Mm-hmm. So I think last year Browns weren't wrapped up to about June 19th or anything like that. Now they're out. So this is a longer break before training camp, 6 weeks, a very important 6 weeks for these players. You want to stay in line and you got to be ready for July because there's a lot of position battles out there. I think there's a lot of players mm-hmm. that are under the radar that are standing out right now. And I think that this roster is nowhere near set. And I think that they have to have that right mindset coming back.
I agree, and I think, I know, Andrew, you were down there with Coach Hugh, and we'll hear from him at 1:30. I'm interested to see what type of message he left these players with because they're given their largest sum of time to themselves, mm-hmm. and I think there's got to be a sense of accomplishment for these players, for Hugh Jackson, to leave this building with a great mindset, but then we all know when you go home and you get comfortable with your friends and family, trouble happens. And I'm not, you know, saying it will happen. I'm just saying it happens.
Sure.
In our sport, in our profession, and I'm very curious to see the message that Coach Hugh Jackson left these guys to have them come back ready to compete and ready to win, as he said time and time again.
I have a question for you in that. Forget the arrests or anything like that, or getting in trouble. If you don't approach it right, how out of shape can you get?
You can get way out of shape.
Yeah.
I mean, don't. A guy like Danny Shelton, who's, mm-hmm. you know, in the last couple of days, we've talked about him losing, what, 30 pounds? Danny Shelton did probably put, if he got a little off track, could put on 7 pounds in a matter of a few days. 8 pounds, you know, 10 pounds in a week, mm-hmm. you know. But, yeah, if you're not doing what you need to do, and I know that, you know, I saw the stacks of paper being, you know, bound for players for summer workout programs and summer nutrition programs, what guys have to leverage is, A, they have to realize that this is their job. And as you said, there's going to be many competitions out there in many different rooms. B, how ready are you going to be to come back and step right back in with the same type of shape and grasping the types of information? Because those are the things that I continually did was you just can't drop your playbook off, you know, at the door and then go out and, you know, and go live your life and do whatever you want to do for the next 6 weeks. It's something you should touch every day, the same way that you're going to run every day, you're going to lift those weights every day. But to answer your question, you can get out of shape because I know that Hugh Jackson and the staff have worked extremely hard to get these guys to where they're at, that he wants as little regression as possible, and that's probably why they went above and beyond with his message, with the literature necessary to keep these guys in shape.
And they've got to be ready with what Hugh has kind of foreshadowed here in these last couple press conferences.
Yes.
This is going to be a physical training camp, very different maybe from last year, more padded practice, more contact. They need to be even more prepared than some of these guys who came back last year.
They definitely do. And I think that it's hard to replicate that now because the places guys will go, unless they're training maybe at high schools and so on and so forth, they're not going to have sleds. They're not going to have bags. So what they're going to be doing is simply just to keep themselves physically fit and mentally fit by being in the playbook. So, but they do have to be ready to get physical.
And to the point also, Gribbs, you know, they've got so many rookies that yeah. they're high on that have come in here and shown themselves well through OTAs and this minicamp. You don't want to backslide. You know, you've made the impression. You don't want to backslide. You're not used to this six-week gap between minicamp and training camp. You don't want to backslide.
Well, especially, yeah, I mean, these rookies, and they haven't had a moment to breathe since the end of their college careers. I mean, they've been going place to place, and I think that's what Corey Coleman mentioned earlier when Hugh Jackson mentioned these guys need to get into game shape and practice shape is because they were living out of hotels, they were traveling all across the country. Now all of a sudden, after being so busy, you're so not busy.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of you don't want to catch your breath too long and then just kind of get out of a routine. but also they do need to rest. I think they need to soak this up as much as possible, maybe not do too much traveling and wear yourself out that way. And I think it's just – it's all about managing your time. Anytime you talk to second-year players, they always talk about how much different the second offseason is because they know how to handle it. So some of these guys might not handle it correctly. They might not know what to do. But I think they're going to be given the guidance on how to do it.
Absolutely. And that's something I always talk about, you know, when you play professional sports or specifically to the NFL, you become a creature of habit because you've been told what to do or when to be there, what to do, how to do it. And if you mess it up, they want you to fix it and get it right or else you're going to be out of a job.
Right.
So you become a creature of habit. So and Gribbs kind of hit on the head because when you get time, when you've been told where to be, what to do, how to do it, so on and so forth, as I just said, and then all of a sudden you can wake up whenever you want. You can eat whatever you want. You can stay up as late as you want. You can play video games as long as you want. You know, all those things are now readily available to these young men. And I think for the rookies, as you asked that original question, the more that they could grasp and pick the brains of the second-year players, the third-year players, the veterans on this roster to go, what's it like? What should I be doing? You know, how ready do I need to be? Because they have a great understanding of their bodies, but they don't have great understanding of how to use their time wisely.
Right.
And that's part of growing up, part of being a professional, part of, you know, now having this be your job and be dedicated to it. So I would imagine that with the culture and kind of hierarchy that Hugh Jackson has created here in Cleveland in a very short time over the last 5 or 6 months, that as we heard from RG3 a couple days ago, sitting down with the rookies, you know, at the lunch table, speaking to these guys, getting to know them, those conversations hopefully happened along the way too. Because as we've heard that guys are going to meet up in the offseason to continue to train together, those are only things that get the arrow pointing in the right direction.
All right, a lot of ways for you to interact with us here on today's show. 216-578-0850 is the number if you want to ask questions for both Matt Wilhelm and Andrew Gribble. You can do that on Twitter at our Twitter handle, Browns_daily. Use the hashtag AskCBD, and we'll open up the mailbag during the show. And if you got questions for the guys, we'll get them as well. We'll hear from Hugh Jackson. We'll also hear from Browns cornerback Tremon Williams coming up. I got to bring this up because, well, a lot of excitement going on, certainly, in Cleveland. Cavaliers got back into the NBA Finals last night. They beat the Golden State Warriors, doing so by 30 points. Kind of feel a little bit better today about the series than maybe we all did 24 hours ago?
Yeah. I mean, I'll go first. I absolutely do. And I think we now know, as Cavs fans, what we need to see out of the Cavs to be able to compete and beat the Golden State Warriors. And it has nothing to do with who they are and everything to do with who we are. Steph is Steph. Klay Thompson's Klay Thompson. Iguodala is who. We can't change who they are, but we can change the way how we play and who we are. And I think even though LeBron had the big night, my biggest key takeaway, and maybe there's two, is we got to have Kyrie running hot. I think Kyrie shooting close to 50%, And facilitating the basketball as well makes the Cavs very hard to beat. Because I think he's your point guard. And that's, you know, if you go back to old school basketball, the point guard dribbles the ball up the court. Mm-hmm. He's the one that runs your offense. And I think that when Kyrie is able to score the basketball, LeBron then wants to be, you know, I guess the Robin to Kyrie's Batman at that point. And I thought that JR eventually hit his run finally. I thought it was genius to start Richard Jefferson. The role that he played, and I know that, you, and we'll go to Gribbs next, but we'll come back to you, that you're kind of tipping, you know, the needle towards not starting Kevin Love.
Yeah.
But all in all, I'm excited. I think this city had an opportunity to provide energy to the team, and we are 1-0 as well as the team is 1-0. We need to go 2-0 in Cleveland and go back to a three-game series in Golden State.
Yeah, the thing that's with the two players that really stood out last night were both Kyrie and JR. Both of those players, their defense is so predicated on how they're playing offensively.
100%.
I mean, like, JR totally is a completely different defensive player. Kyrie held his own on defense. And I think they were making shots last night. I think Van Gundy pointed this out, some bad possessions that still ended up in points.
Yep.
But I think they had fewer bad possessions on offense because they were getting so much energy out of their defense. And I think the thing moving LeBron to Draymond was a big adjustment. I don't think – I'd have to look at this. I can be wrong. But I feel like Draymond's been a different player on home and road throughout this entire
Absolutely.
Playoff series. I mean, he was terrible in OKC during those couple of games. And, you know, everyone keeps saying, you know, Steph and Clay are due. They're due to break out. I mean, I think they are to some extent. But you look back at last year's finals, too. I mean, Steph didn't even win MVP in that series as well. There's obviously something the Cavs are doing to make him feel uncomfortable, and it dates back not just to this series but last year's series.
Let me ask you this, Matt. It was interesting last night. I was watching SportsCenter after the game. Vince Carter said, "Look, when I look at Steph Curry right now, he looks tired.
Yeah,
he looks absolutely tired. I know he's dealing with the knee injury and the ankle injury and all that, but just the strain maybe of the 73 wins and everything. And I remember we talked about it during the course of the end of the regular season. Would this crusade for the record come back to maybe haunt Golden
State?
I don't know if that's the case, but it's just interesting to hear a guy who's been there a long time, Vince Carter, say, boy, Steph looks tired.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've also played, what, 3-4 games more than the Cavaliers have in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. The Cavs had a sweep, six-game series, whereas Golden State went five-game series, seven-game series.
Yep.
So they've played a few more games, and that starts to wear on you. It really does. And I can see that he doesn't look as present, mm-hmm. I guess you can say, as he has in the past or when things are running good. And I think to get back to your original comment about, you know, Clay and Steph are going to have their time. If both of them goes for, you know, 25 and 30, I have no problem with it because I think Kyrie can go for 25. LeBron can go for 30. Mm-hmm. It all becomes about, okay, we'll say our big two and their big two are a wash. How does everybody else fit in? What can Love provide, JR provide, Shump provide, Channing provide, Richard Jefferson provide? And then you go to what can Iguodala and Draymond and Livingston and Bogut and Barbosa and Harrison Barnes? Take the twos away. It's really about everyone else. And I think when you get the effort from JR on both ends and you get the effort from Richard Jefferson, because Jefferson didn't have his double-digit points as he's had in a few games, I think, in the Raptor series. But, I mean, he was fighting and clawing and scratching for every rebound, every loose ball.
I thought he set the tone last night.
You know what really set the tone for me to get off jump is Mozgov's pick on Klay Thompson, which I know he came out after the game and said he thought was dirty. So what? Let him be our Igor enforcer that comes in and plays 7 minutes and bangs those two around when they try to, you know, get skinny on those picks.
I love it.
Stick a leg out.
I will say this, and this may sound really ridiculous, but, like, I know the Cavs were up 2-1 at this time last year, and I'm still skeptical on if they can make this, they can turn this into, really turn this series around, but it was a real ominous feeling after Game 3 last year because you had that huge lead. Steph got real hot in the fourth quarter, and you just squeaked away with that game, and it looked like Golden State found a rhythm, and they really did, and they just ran away with the series. This year, you're down 2-1, but you don't have that same feeling like Golden State has something figured out.
Yeah,
They're going to make an adjustment.
Wasn't it that same game, though, that is when Kerr started the small lineup?
In the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
he got David Lee active.
And then from that, he got David Lee active, and then at that point, he went to Iguodala to start games.
Over Bogut.
And that was when Dellavedova went to the hospital and was never the same after that. I mean, it just, even though you're up 2-1, it didn't feel great. You're down 2-1. You don't feel awesome, but you feel like if you can win Friday, then you really turn around the momentum.
If you look at the narrative on ESPN.com or you watch SportsCenter, the narrative has completely shifted to LeBron's not a leader, and the Cavs have no energy, and it's embarrassing, and it's going to be a sweep. I just read an article before jumping on the radio, and Dino and I were sitting here. It's all about how the Warriors may not be in the best situation staying small, where it's like we might want to slow it down a little bit with Curry and Clay not running hot, and get Bogut back in the lineup and facilitate things through him a little bit more old school basketball. So, in one game after a 30-point win, we've got them reeling, or at least people are speaking that we have the Warriors reeling.
Last thought before we hit our first break here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Matt, you played in the NFL. You played at Ohio State. Gribbs, you've covered college and pro sports for a long time. Have you ever seen a postseason where home court, home field in this case, you know, home court in the NBA has mattered so much in these kinds of types of just blowouts that's gone from one extreme to the other?
I personally have not. I really haven't. And I know there are places in every sport, you know, 3 to 5 or enough that you can count on the hand that truly have a home field advantage. But I always thought, while there's adversity when you play on the road, if you come in and do your job, both personally and then collectively, and you have a good game plan, you got a great shot of winning regardless of where you play it, or even at a neutral site. In some cases, you know, being a Super Bowl or a national championship. So I have never seen it like this, and even more so, I thought the stat that they threw out later in the game with the number of 20, was it 20-plus wins or 25-point wins in the playoffs, with that total being 19
of them.
And the
now.
Closest was what, 11?
Yes.
But I mean,
that was the previous
you
record.
Look at the OKC, you know, Warrior series. It was blowout, yep. Then blowout on the other side. The Cavs have been blown out by the Raptors and also blown out the Raptors. So I've never seen it like this before.
I wonder if it's because you're dealing with not only some really elite teams that have made it to this stage of the playoffs that are really good at stepping on the throat once they get it to that stage, mm-hmm. or you also have teams like the Spurs and even others that know when they really don't have a shot at winning, they really reel it back. I mean, Golden State last night made the first move in terms of putting in the bench at the end of the game.
Yes.
They are the ones that waved the white flag first, and then the Cavs slowly kind of responded, even though they kept guys out there a little bit longer. I still didn't. Watching the Cavs-Warriors, I never feel safe with the lead until, like, last night I felt maybe pretty good at, like, with the three-minute mark in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like this was over. Like,
but how scary was it, though, second quarter when we had it at 14 or 15 and then it'd get to 7?
Yeah.
You know?
I got to be honest, going into halftime.
I said, if we weren't at 14, I wasn't safe.
Yeah. At halftime, up 8, I was like, oh, boy, they might be able to, you know, make some adjustments because the Cavs historically do not play well in the third quarter. They did last night.
Well, the thing that, and I noticed this in the second quarter yesterday, the thing the Warriors do so well that is something that you have to be able to be ready for, whenever you make what appears to be like a soul-crushing three-pointer, like a JR in the corner, everyone goes nuts, they got to call a timeout. They don't call a timeout. They run a fast-paced offense and try to get a three right away, mm-hmm. and they did that, and that's when they went on a quick like 7-0 run. That's where the Warriors are the best, is their ability to erase deficits and extend leads in such a hurry that keeps you, like, your margin of error is just
And
so
you saw
small.
That happen in games 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you'd had them at 4 or 5, they go on an 8-0 run, and you're down 13 at the blink of an eye.
Yeah. It's the thing that scares you the
and
most.
And Tyronn Lue's timeout doesn't help.
No.
Much as they try to think it does. All right, that sets the table for you in this opening segment of Cleveland Browns Daily. We'll certainly talk about the Cavaliers and what they've got to do heading into Game 4. But it is the final day of minicamp here in Berea as the Browns will break away here for a few weeks. We'll talk about that. We'll hear from Hugh Jackson at the bottom of the hour. 216-578-0850, the number to call. You can tweet us using @Browns_daily. Use the hashtag AskCBD. It is Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR. All right, back here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Live from the Dog Bowl here in Berea, Dave DiNatale along with Matt Wilhelm and Andrew Gribble. We'll hear from Browns head coach Hugh Jackson coming up in just a few minutes. Cornerback Tremont Williams next hour. We'll also open up the mailbag and have Fact
People,
or Fiction.
Yeah, keep the mailbag rolling in.
Yes.
All your questions have come in thus far. We'll get to them in that segment, but
yes.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. Again, our Twitter address is, Twitter handle, I should say, is @Browns_daily. Use the hashtag AskCBD. We'll get to your questions coming up. On the phones, 216-578-0850. Let's go to Eric in Cleveland. Eric, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Thank you, guys. Hey, I heard you guys speak of Corey Coleman catching a nice pass. I first wanted to ask, who was the pass thrown by? And I heard that it was caught on Justin Gilbert, and I wanted to know how Justin Gilbert reacted to that. And also, I just wanted to say how awesome it would be for us to get the best of Robert Griffin III without having to give away the farm for him.
You're absolutely right, and I had an opportunity to join Pat Kerwin yesterday on Sirius Radio, and he asked about Robert Griffin III, and I talked about how Robert Griffin III is our swing at the plate this year, without taking Carson Wentz or without taking Jared Goff. He is our guy. Speaking of our guy, Sashi Brown, walking by the Dog Bowl at this moment.
Yes.
But making reference to the a deep comeback route, which is a new route that Corey Coleman has learned, that Al Saunders has forced him to run. It was thrown yesterday at practice, Tuesday at practice on Justin Gilbert by RG3. Hmm. Deep comeback, like an 18-yard, 20-yard comeback. Gilbert's reaction was competitive, but he spun him around like a top, and I think that's the one thing and why I've kind of, penciled in or markered in that Corey Coleman will be our number one wide receiver is his ability to beat you with the home run, but also he's gaining the ability to run the full route tree.
Yeah, and he's got a special ability to get open. I think that's the key thing, and that's why he was a first-round pick. And I think Hugh Jackson was asked about him after practice today. He said he's been tremendous, and he thinks he's going to be a really good football player in this league. And I think that he's had the right approach, and he's getting so coached up by Al Saunders out there that every single route he runs, there's a critique, whether it's positive, negative, or just trying to get him in the right direction. I mean, I'm imagining when you're the elite player that he was at Baylor, you're not getting that kind of attention when you're as good as he was at Baylor. So I think this is new for him, and I think there's going to be some growing pains, but ultimately he's a special kind of player that is going to have an ability to impact the game.
And you know what's so great about that? For so many people obviously there's those that think positive, those that think negative. It's like, well, why does a coach have to say something to him after every route?
Right.
And simply because, I coach my son and some of his buddies. It's almost to the point where you have a teacher or coach where when they stop saying things or when they stop coaching you is when they stop caring. Mm-hmm. And right now, Al Saunders, he is the energy bug that's out there at practice vocally with this wide receiver group. He is not going to let them fail because he also knows, the significant amount of work that it's going to take for this group because they are so young. They are so inexperienced. You even throw in Terrell Pryor, really never having played wide receiver before. So it's one of those things where I love the fact that, or I loved a coach that would always say something to me, good or bad.
Right.
Because the one thing you don't want to do is go out there, do a play, feel like you did good. Your two or three reps are over and you come over and you stand next to your coach and he doesn't say anything.
Let me know where I stand.
Let me know hey, a good job. A pat on the back. Treat me like a dog. Like, hey, I went and fetched the ball and I brought it back to you.
Right.
So that positive reinforcement is a very good thing.
What about the other rookie receivers, Gribbs? Lewis Payton, Higgins. What have been your impressions watching their growth from rookie camp through now in the minicamp?
Well, first off, Payton hasn't been here.
He hasn't been here at all.
On field, yeah.
I didn't know if he was
back. He's finishing up school, and with the way the Browns' schedule fell early, it's just hard to, I think, to make the schedule. I think last year, Shelton was able to get back by minicamp because
we were
a couple weeks later down the calendar. So I think we'll hear from Hugh Jackson later.
Those quarter schools.
Yeah. Oh, no, I remember that all too well with Ohio University and trying to get internships. That was the most fun with those. But, he was actually asked about Payton yesterday. He says they're keeping in touch with him a lot. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to make up some ground, clearly, because you just can't replicate what he's missed so far. But it's something they knew going into the draft, everything like that, so it's okay. I think Higgins – has been solid. I think Ricardo Lewis has been solid. They're making plays out there, but again, they're getting that kind of constant attention from Al Saunders. The two receivers to me that have stood out just from what you're seeing them consistently make plays and getting positive words from Al Saunders is one, Terrell Pryor. Mm-hmm. Has really he's making a lot of plays out there, drastically improved from last year, and I think clearly he's just benefiting from being on the field. I mean,
right.
He missed so much of training camp last year, missed a lot of on-the-field action for what this could have been. He might have been farther along if he was able to practice as much during training camp last year. And another guy is Rinnell Hall. I've liked what I've seen from Rinnell Hall, a guy who was a late addition to the roster last year. I talked to him a couple of days ago. He learned an entire offense in like a week to crash course, get ready to be on the field, played for like one snap at the end of the year, and then comes back brand new offense this year. So he's had to kind of adjust to a lot of different things, but I think he's got some talent, and I think he's someone that if you're looking for an under the radar guy at this stage, it's really early, but someone that could, you know, maybe make an impact that is not kind of these big name kind of guys.
So that's where kind of we stand right now as the Browns wrap up mini camp here. What was the sense downstairs? You know, you had Hugh Jackson, obviously, at the podium. We'll hear from Hugh coming up. But players, I can imagine, it's schools out. It's like they're rushing to catch planes to go home because, I mean, this is their last chance before the off season is over.
Yeah, some guys were like that. A lot of guys were hanging around as I was walking through the field house, kind of hanging out for like the last time for the next 6 weeks or so. But I thought there was a real high energy finish to practice, which is what they wanted. They did a lot of 11-on-11 at the end. Kind of players were really engaged. You saw some really good offensive plays. You also saw some pretty good defensive plays. I saw Joe Schobert get his hands on another deflection, another interception that he's been able to make. He's been someone that's been able to get used a lot. You've seen him on the outside, but he's also versatile enough. He's someone that's also getting attention on special teams. Saw him getting coached up yesterday by Tabor on a lot of different special teams mm-hmm. drills. He's a guy to watch and someone who's been active, and you see him standing out. It'll be once these guys get in pads, the guy that I'm going to be most wanting to watch is Ogbo, because you can simulate if a guy was going to get to the quarterback or not, but it's always about sealing the deal. Browns got to the quarterback a lot last year and just couldn't wrap guys up.
Right.
I think that Kansas City game that seemed like they kept getting Alex Smith, but he kept wiggling away. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of seeing him really show what he can do as a pass rusher, but the reviews have been really strong about how well he moves for how big he is.
And Dino, just to give you guys some insight, is kind of goes along with, you know, the sentiments of some of the guys still being in the building, you know, hanging out for their last opportunity, is I don't believe there are places that I played and or other guys had come in and referenced stories about other places where when a time like this and you have an opportunity where you are literally off the clock to the point where if we really stood outside, we hear like wheels screeching,
right,
leaving
this
parking lot. They're getting the hell out of here as fast as they can. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily believe that this is that culture that guys enjoy being in this building. They enjoy being around each other. They enjoy being coached. They are engulfed in winning and Hugh Jackson and this new culture to the point where, yeah, guys are going to leave. You know, some will fly out of here, but other guys, like, do I really have anywhere to go that's more important than like just taking my time and hanging with my guys and kind of shooting the stuff with each other before I'm not going to see you for 6 weeks? So that to me is an improvement upon where this organization has been, where guys are like, boom, you give them time, boom, they're all over the country
right. In
the next
scattered,
you know, 16 hours. Mm-hmm. It's like they're making where they're going next they're a higher priority than where they are, which is really what matters.
All right, so that is where we kind of sit right now. The Browns are done with minicamp. I can't believe how fast this period has gone between the draft and now. We'll certainly have a lot to talk about.
Now the fun part comes.
Yeah, exactly.
No players, no coaches' comments for the next 6 weeks.
For the next 6 weeks. But we do have coach comments. We will hear from head coach Hugh Jackson coming up next. This is Cleveland Browns Daily right here on ESPN 850 WKNR. back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, here from the Dog Bowl in Berea. Now, per our executive producer, Jason Gibbs, here's what we're going to do. You're going to hear in a moment from Browns head coach Hugh Jackson from yesterday. And then on tomorrow's show, when we're back with you, we'll play Hugh Jackson's closing press conference from today, which just happened a little bit ago. So, without further ado, here is Browns head coach Hugh Jackson following the conclusion of Wednesday's mini camp practice.
It should be. Hope the Cavs can go get it tonight. No. Huh? Got too much football to look at tonight. Well, again, it was an opportunity for our group to go back out for the second day of mandatory mini camp, and I think our guys are—they're giving me everything they have, and we're practicing a lot of different situations, so that our team understands situational football and just how easy it is to, lose a game if you don't understand how to deal with the different situations. So we put them in a lot of different situations today, taught them some things, about the game. I had some teaching moments, which I think is very important as well. But I think the most important thing is we're trying to expose our team to any and everything that can happen in a football game so that when it does happen, that we have a lot of poise, that we've kind of rehearsed it a little bit so that we can deal with those things as we move forward. Because we know winning these games in the National Football League comes down to that. You know, it comes down to who can take the ball away from the other team's offense, who can keep the ball, as far as our offense is concerned, who can play great special teams, and who can eliminate the self-inflicted wounds, that happens to football teams. So we're going to work at that each and every day, and we'll continue to do so through training camp until it's time for us to really play a game and test it. So I think our guys are doing well.
There are a lot of things that matter: preparation, attitude, approach. There's also ability. At what point, you've been doing this a long time, when in the year do you know if you have enough talent, if you have enough ability?
Well, I think, obviously once we start playing real games, you have a pretty good feel. And there's no question, I'm going to have a feel before the end of DD. I think you're right. I mean, I know what good football players look like, what they play like, what they act like, how they work. And, I feel very comfortable and confident where we are right now. But I think, as we all know, this is just the start of our team. What the team's going to be once we get to September, no one knows that. Right now there's a lot of things that can happen between now and then. But the core of the team, you're right, is here. And I feel good in some areas. I feel some areas we need to continue to keep improving as players. We can get better. There's a lot of players here that I still think can take another step, through the summer, through the off season, through training camp, in order to get themselves to where they need to be for the season. So, it's a good question, but at the same time, I think we got a real good nucleus of men that's going to have an opportunity to represent this organization well.
What was going on with Connor Buffelli and Shelton and maybe some other defenders? And I know coaches have different philosophies. Some coaches have different philosophies on fighting and practice. So where do you kind of stand on that?
I'm not for fighting. I mean, we can't fight in the game. In the new rule, if something happens like that, you can be kicked out of the game. So you get two personal foul penalties, you're out. So it was a teaching moment for our football team. And we'll leave it at that. But men are going to be men, and there sometimes those things happen. But it wasn't a fight. It was just a conversation. Got a little rowdy, and we were able to get it slowed down. But those guys are, again, they're competing. Things happen like that sometimes, and we'll always talk about those things. We're not going to play the Cleveland Browns this year. No, we play the opponents, so I think our guys understand that.
You kind of inherited Joe Thomas's practice schedule. Can you just talk about how comfortable you are with him getting days off here and there?
Very, because I understand it and know exactly what it is, and I think it's a little bit different than what everybody thinks. Again, I think Joe has done a tremendous job here. And Joe will be the first to tell you there's certain things that he knows I expect from him, and he's done them all. The beautiful part, he's here every day, and he doesn't have to be. And I know this guy's 9 years, don't miss much of anything. And my job is to make sure he can get to the game and play as well as he can play, but making sure that he's prepared to play and has done enough work, and I will feel very comfortable with that. It's not so much I inherited his schedule as that I've inherited a really good player. And I know exactly and he knows exactly what it is he needs to do. And I'm very comfortable with our medical staff, our strength conditioning staff, of our conversations about how to get him to where he needs to be so he can play great.
Earlier today that one of his teammates was complimenting his work ethic. When you look at Robert, is he someone who's actively trying to eliminate previous perceptions about him or try to win over teammates in any way?
I don't look at it as winning over teammates or if he's even worried about a perception. I think what he's trying to do is be the best football player he can be. And I think he understands our environment and what our expectations are. You know, I don't think it has anything to do with his past. I mean, the past is just that. It's the past. I think he's building a great future for himself. And I think he's understanding and taking the thought process of the demands that it takes to play the position so that he's prepared to play. And, I, you know, kudos to him. He's done a great job.
What do you see in his teammates and how they respond to him?
It's been great. I mean, I haven't noticed any issues with Robert, and I wouldn't anticipate there would be, you know. From a long time ago, our first conversations till now, he's been, I've said it before, he's been outstanding. He's growing each and every day, and I'm sure you guys see it on the football field. I mean, the guy is, he's getting better. And I think a lot of our players are getting better, not just him, but I think, you know, around our football team, that's what we try to do as coaches, try to get, you know, each and every player that's here the best we can get them to give ourselves a chance to have success.
You and Robert, we saw him have so much success at the very outset of his career playing in sort of a non-traditional offensive system with a style that may or may not have been sustainable for very long. From what you see of him now, is he suited to be more of a pocket passer if that's what you want out of him? Can he succeed in that kind of system, or does he still need to sort of gradually move into that style?
I think Robert can do whatever we ask him to do. I think he's demonstrating that every day. I think he's getting better in some things. You know, I think there's always things that players, you know, Robert, everybody can get better at each and every day. And I think he's chasing those things to get better at them. But I don't have any reservations of anything in our offense that he can't do. Or there's some things he does better right today, and I think he'll be better at some other things by the time we get to training camp. There's no question. But I think that's every football player's charge, you know, across the National Football League. So he's done well. I mean, I know every day, like I said, when I come in here, it's really about him. I get it. But we have some other quarterbacks and other receivers and linemen and defense and special teams that I think they're all getting better. And that's kind of really the focus of our football team right now.
Admittedly, from this side of the desk, it's amateur analysis, but it looks like Josh McCown is throwing the ball better than all the other quarterbacks. Is that fair?
You're entitled to your opinion. I respect your opinion. And my opinion is I think all of our quarterbacks are throwing the ball pretty well. I think all of our quarterbacks have improved. And I would expect Josh to throw the ball as well as he does. He's been playing football in this league for a long time, you know. And but I also watched Robert today throw the ball really well. Watch Austin throw the ball really well. I've seen some plays that Cody made that were pretty well. So there's a lot of – I mean, I know we get so focused in on certain things that guys are doing, but I think as a whole, I watch our football team. I watch the player as a whole. It's not just one throw. It's every throw. You know, we're evaluating each and everything they do, and I think all the guys are spinning the ball pretty good. I think they've gotten better. I think they're getting used to what my expectation is, how to play the position the way I see it through my eyes. And I think Pep's done a great job of preparing these guys each and every day, and they've come out and done a great job of accepting the challenge.
When you go in with your staff and the players and you look at the practice film, how do you really evaluate, you know, what you're seeing out there when they're either doing it on air, 50% speed, or
50% speed? I didn't see that. That's new for me. That's a new one. The players probably wouldn't like to hear you say that.
Slower, but I guess the point is, how do you really evaluate, you know, what you're seeing when there's no live defense out there, you know, for them going against, they're simulating a lot of that.
We have the same issue as the 31 other teams, you know. That's the rules. But there's so many different ways of, you know, evaluating. I mean, again, the situational football part of it, you know, the fundamentals and techniques that we asked our players to do in a consistent basis. There's so many other ways of evaluating the players. But then, you know, when I do watch the team situation, it's full speed. as fast as they can go without taking anybody to the ground. So they do go very fast and very hard, and probably if we're slowed down, it's probably a teaching session, you know, because I don't go very slow around here. I think we kind of go, and we'll kind of always be that way, because that's just the only way to be good. I mean, players have to play at a full speed pace, and guys have to execute at a full speed pace. So there's just no other way.
Is he going to be out in an extended period of time?
No, he won't be out extended period of time, obviously. Sometimes guys get a little tweaked, and as I tell you, we take care of guys and try to make sure they're okay. And he's done a great job. He's out here the other day kicking, you know. And so if a guy has something that we want to make sure that we get it behind us, that's just how we go about it, which has been good.
Quarterback room, you have a lot of experience, a lot of veteran guys. Mm-hmm. The wide receiver room is kind of the opposite. Do you kind of look at the quarterback room and expect them to kind of take some of these receivers and kind of help them to learn how to be offense and whatnot?
The great quarterbacks in the National Football League, they mold the offensive football team, not just, you know, the receivers. They mold the team. They mold the group. You know, that's one of the hats. You guys ask me things I'm looking for. That's another one of the prerequisites for playing quarterback for us. You know, that guy's kind of the Pied Piper for a little bit of everything. But, yeah, I expect that room to take receivers, whether old, young, you know, whatever that is, and show them exactly how we do it, because that's their responsibility.
How do you think they've done thus far?
I think they've done a good job. I think we've seen Corey Coleman get better, you know, over the last several days. I think, obviously, I mean, it was Marlon Moore's making plays all over the place. Terrell Pryor's making plays. You know, Hawkins is Hawk. He's making plays. So I think all of those guys accepted the challenge. You know, but again, I think it is a quarterback-driven system for us, and it is about the quarterback making sure that these guys function at a high level all the time for them.
Good.
Thank you very much.
All right, so that's head coach Hugh Jackson. That again was from yesterday's press conference at the end of yesterday's practice. We will play kind of the final Hugh Jackson press conference tomorrow on tomorrow's show. So you'll hear Hugh before he stepped out. But one thing from today that we can tell you, and I know Gribbs, you were downstairs. There will be a quarterback competition going into camp. He did not name a starter today.
Yeah, and based on his comments throughout the entire offseason, it's not much of a surprise. No. I think you're really not in much of a hurry at this stage of the offseason. You want these guys to use these next 6 weeks. I think a lot's been made on Robert Griffin III's plans over this offseason, working with Tom House and those kind of guys. You want to see where they come along, but you know, you kind of get a sense of where this could be headed. We've seen a lot on the field, seen a lot of RG3, a lot of Josh McCown, and a little bit of Cody Kessel these last few days after he was, missed the first part of OTAs, but has been back and getting those guys involved. And I think it's at some point it's hard to give five guys reps, but you know, we've seen a lot of those two veterans so far throughout these practices.
Sure, Gribbs, and you're in that press conference room, and the question gets asked almost every time Hugh Jackson hits the podium about naming a starter. As a writer, put yourself on the outside as a beat writer for a team as you've been before. What's the big deal in knowing who the starter is and who doesn't, especially when you're going to write your article or maybe another article or two about it over the course of the next 6 weeks, and then it becomes a moot point? You know, that can all change when they come back in training camp anyway. What's the whole point of naming a starter right now if it's not very, very clear as it is in a few places?
I guess it pertains to the fact that there's no position in any sport that is as important as a quarterback.
Right.
So I think that's where it all comes to. I think you factor in the history of the Browns and the quarterback position. You factor in the celebrity factor of Robert Griffin III, which adds even more intrigue to this position battle. And I think you also, he's probably getting asked the question this year because when he was asked about it initially back at rookie camp, you know, he said maybe it could be at the end of OTAs. Maybe it could be at the end of the offseason workout. He never said at that point we're going to do it in training camp because maybe he could have been compelled over these last few practices to name it. It's just in my experience, usually if a guy's going to make an announcement that important, it's not just going to come off the cuff and be like because someone asked him that question.
Sure,
it's going to be a separate announcement. But I guess it's kind of a you know, you want to cover your bases as a reporter and want to make sure you get. There's no more. It's just there's so much intrigue in that quarterback position when you're covering a professional football team. But It's just I think once there's a theory out there that once you name your starter a quarterback, then you can kind of figure everything else.
Sure.
So I think that's what it comes down to.
I got it. And I guess for me, you know, I think because of all those things that you laid out on why specifically in here in Cleveland it's so important because of, you know, the roundabout that has been the quarterback position, I just think you name a starter, what portion of those articles that are going to be written are going to be overly positive, and what portion of them are going to be like moot or negative about everything bad about RG3 or everything bad or that Josh McCown can't do instead of what he can do. And that's why I think at this point I'm on board with Hugh Jackson not naming a starter for many reasons. One being is got to put the pads on, got to do it, you know, with bullets flying. And I think that's how you truly evaluate these players. And then, you know, secondly, there's really nothing to gain for him as the head coach of a team to have a starter right now, just to appease everyone around him.
Yeah, because you can speak from the player perspective. Does it matter to all the players right now?
No.
Especially on defense, I would imagine.
And honestly, if I were – and I've never been a wide receiver, but it doesn't matter if the ball is being delivered and I have the ability to catch it and it's on time and you're not, you know, getting my head knocked off crossing the middle. I don't care – Kessler, McCown, RG3, Connorshaw, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. If the ball is there on time, it's on time. That's right. All I care about.
It's just a storyline that's not going to go away.
I know.
No. And Hugh even there at the middle of it said, I know you guys, you know, RG3, you guys want to keep asking about it, but he's happy with everybody in the quarterback room. And, of course, he's got to say that. He doesn't have to say that, but he's trying to stay – positive for all the guys in that quarterback.
And I just think if you're looking at Robert Griffin III, I think most people outside the building believe that he's ultimately going to be the guy at some point. You want him to win the job.
Yes.
You want him to show that he is the best quarterback out there. And I think that as Hugh was asked yesterday about McCown, clearly he's going to come in playing pretty well. You know, McCown has seen every kind of offense that this NFL has to offer. He's going to be someone that's comfortable with all these moving parts. McCown played football last year. Robert Griffin III was not. So it's just a matter of a lot of different things factoring into why this decision has been made now.
Just saw smiling Hugh walking around, by the way. All right. Break time for us here in the Dog Bowl here on Cleveland Browns Daily. We're back with more right after this here on ESPN 850 WKNR.